Today is May 27th, 1995. I am at the home of Mr. Lester Pyatt on Bull Prairie in Madison Heights. Hi, Lester. How are you today?
Pretty
well. Okay. And how long have you lived in Madison Heights?
A little over 14 years.
14 years, okay. Somewhere in there.
Okay. And where were you born?
I was born in Belgium.
Okay. Oh.
Charleroi, Belgium.
Okay. Charleroi, Belgium.
How would you spell that?
C-H-A-R-L-E-R-O-I.
Okay. Charleroi, Belgium. Uh-huh. And when did you come to the United States?
When I was 7 years old.
Okay.
That was approximately 1905.
Okay, 1905. And I was going to ask you, what year were you born in?
I was born in 1898, I think. Okay.
1898.
That's it.
Is that right?
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, 1898. Okay, all right. And where did you live in the United States when you first came?
In Pennsylvania.
Oh, okay.
And the town was the first place that we lived there was Granville.
Granville.
That's a little country place.
Uh-huh.
Just outside of Charleroi, Pennsylvania.
Oh, okay. Then when did you come to Michigan?
When did I come to Michigan? Uh-huh.
Or were you in the service first?
Oh, yes.
Oh, okay. You were a World War I veteran.
Yes.
What could you tell us of some of your experiences?
Well, I enlisted on
January 1st, 2nd, or 3rd,
somewhere in there.
1918.
1918 is right.
Okay. And where did you take your basic training?
I didn't have any.
Oh, didn't you? They just sent you over.
Yeah.
You know. Oh, that's right. January 2nd.
I was sent to this a company that was already to move, and they were short two or three men or whatever it was, and I was one of them to fill in.
Oh my goodness. And you left, where did you leave to go overseas?
Where did I leave from?
Mm-hmm.
That was in,
I think he left out of New York.
I'm out of New York, but where my company was, that was
Hoboken.
No, make it out of New York.
Okay. And how long were you on the ship?
On the ship? I got on the ship about the third or the fourth day of January.
Not on the ship. Uh-huh.
I went to my camp about that
time. Okay.
And I got on the ship pretty close to the same time. I was only there a week or two before we left to go on the ship.
Uh-huh. And how old were you?
Well, I was 21.
21, okay. And
my dad or mother would let me go until I was 21.
Right. Right. Oh, I don't blame them. That was close calls going over there in those days. And did you have the unit that he was in?
Yes. He was in the 20th Engineers, 6th Headquarters.
Headquarters of the 6th Battalion.
Right.
Okay.
20th Engineers.
Mm-hmm. get that out of my box.
Yeah, I'm just...
Everything was in there.
Yeah.
And what happened while you were on the ship? Could you tell us?
Beg your pardon?
Could you tell us what happened when you were on the ship?
Well, nothing happened for the 14, 15 first days. And on this one day, which was the day before we expected to land, was a beautiful day on the ocean. The ocean is just
like glass.
Quiet as could be. No big waves or nothing. We had all kind of sports on that day, right up on top of the ship, and races and whatever, and boxing, and then at supper time, we all went back to our cabins, of course, and I was on my group, which was the headquarters department, that's what I was in. We went for the first setting of the meal.
Okay.
And that was at exactly 5 o'clock their time.
Uh-huh.
And we had our meal, and we all got out and we all started to go upstairs. I was already in our pleasure room, like a parlor or whatever you want to call it. We played cards up there, and I was sitting in my chair, and I was the only one up there. And all gone. I have to stop now.
Okay.
It's okay. I'm sitting by myself waiting on my partners to come up. The whole thing exploded.
Take your time.
Out the door and went down to the dining room where we just had left it. And the second shift for dinner, they were all down there, all water clear up to their waist.
Oh my goodness.
And a lot of them had already fallen down over the tables and chairs trying to get out. And it started to fill him up from there. And I started to walk around the ship. I didn't get excited at all.
That was good.
I started to walk different places on the ship, second, third, fourth deck above me. And it was all dark. The lights had all been turned off or burned out or whatever. I went by three of my buddies that were standing still right in one place.
And they finally, that was on February the 5th,
uh-huh.
1918, the day the boat was torpedoed. And then when...
What date have you got for that?
February the 5th, 1918, and just about a month after you went in.
Yeah, the 5th.
Yeah, according to your Army papers, it was the 5th day.
It was?
February.
Anyway, these three boys that I passed, everything was dark. They were two of them were standing up, the other one was laying down on the floor. Completely naked.
Oh my goodness.
Taking all his clothes off. No one of them was reading his Bible. And the other one was just swinging his arms in the dark and not moving. They just stood right there. And I kept walking. Walked around to where the barber shop was. Their lights were still on. Nothing was in there, nobody was in there. Then I went up to the next deck, and and there weren't anybody around up there. I went, and I went up to the top of the hill. And all of our officers and other men, either in the Army or American, had something to do with the Army, but they weren't in the Army. They were all up on top of the deck, up on top of the ship. Quite a few of them. And I talked to a number of them. And in fact, I talked to one of them that later, I'll say that later on. And I went back down and I just kept walking around. I was all by myself, just looking at everything, unafraid of anything.
Yes.
I finally went outside again onto the board sidewalk on the ship.
Uh-huh.
And I was walking around there, and there was an English ship about 150, 200 feet away from me. And one of them called over to me, and he said, "Better get a hold of that rope, sailor or soldier, we're gonna cut it loose."
Oh.
And I looked up, and the rope was right up above me. So I jumped up, got a hold of that rope, and they pulled me over there.
Oh.
And that, from there, they took me to Buncrana, Ireland.
Uh-huh.
That's where I got off.
Okay. Was this on the coast of Ireland?
Yes.
Uh-huh.
It was a shipping yard for whatever they were shipping out of Ireland.
Mm-hmm.
I think maybe cattle or chickens or whatever. And all the women were at their stands. Each woman from a farm had their own stands at this place, and they all had hot coffee and a little snack of bread for everybody.
Mm-hmm. The boat was torpedoed?
Beg your pardon?
The boat was torpedoed?
Yeah,
is that what happened?
Yes. Yeah.
It went down.
Yes.
There were three torpedoes that were fired at them, and two of them struck between two smokestacks, and the boat listed almost immediately.
It went over fast. It didn't sink fast.
But it listed.
Yes.
Uh-huh.
And about most of our boys, I say most of them that we lost, I don't know that for sure, but there's a lot of them, they just jumped over.
Right.
Yeah, according to this paper, Dad, 125 men drowned going into the water.
Well, they were probably the ones that jumped over.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. And then?
And the place they landed, in Ireland, on the Irish coast there, was named Larne County 8 Antrim.
Okay.
And they stayed at a place called the King's Arms there when they to give them some beds and to a place to rest and sleep until they could move them out of there. And according to, I think, we were there about 5 days. And then they took you by train over to Dublin, Ireland. And then from there, they went to Winchester, England. And they stayed there. They got some more. They lost everything they had on board, and they included uniforms and their shoes and everything. And when they got there, they gave them some new English uniforms.
Oh, okay. Did they fit?
They said they looked like a sad sight. And then they finally, when they shipped out of there then. They went to, they shipped over to France.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Anyway, we had plenty of protection when we went there at that time.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
We had four torpedo destroyers.
Oh, okay. Uh-huh. When you were in France, what sectors were you in? Excuse me.
When we got to France,
Did you just?
Well, we went clear away from anywhere near the front.
Uh huh.
What my outfit was, and I didn't really know it until we got there and they started to establish their equipment. All they were lumbermen.
Oh, no.
We were clear out to the southern part of France where there were acres and acres of pine trees. And they were there chopping down the pine trees to make ties and blocks and whatever was needed at the front.
Right.
We were at least 200 miles away from any fighting.
Oh, that was good. Oh, man.
The only fighting was among ourselves.
Yes, right. Probably a lot of that. Oh.
I happened to be in the headquarters department because I spoke French.
Oh.
And I had the best of everything.
Right. Okay.
And I was with the commander all the time. And I drove his car.
Okay. And how long were you there?
In France?
Uh-huh.
Well, just about a year.
Okay.
Not
so
much over.
You
a year.
Were there after the armistice.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh. And then you came home. And then where did you go from when you came home?
Went back home to California, Pennsylvania.
Okay. And then when did you come to Michigan?
Michigan? Well, that's quite a while.
Uh-huh.
I got married a year after I was home.
Uh-huh.
And then I lived around California
mm-hmm.
and Charleroi, Pennsylvania
uh-huh.
for the next 10-12 years,
okay.
I would say.
Mm-hmm.
Then I came to Detroit from there.
Okay.
I came to Detroit during the Depression.
Yes. Uh-huh.
I came here and everybody told me, no use going out there, there are no jobs.
Right.
But I came out and I got a job the first day I was there.
Oh, well, great.
Wasn't a good job, but a job in a shop,
uh-huh.
in a store downtown.
Oh.
Where they sold all, taken over stock from bankruptcies
uh-huh.
and whatever.
Uh-huh.
And I worked there a week. I worked in the restaurant a week. Any place I could get a little bit of work.
Right.
And then after about 3 months, I brought my family over and rented a home. I got a job at the. I had several jobs before I finally got one at Plymouth. So I was about a year getting established after
okay.
I got to Detroit.
Mm-hmm. Right. And you have. Your family. You had how many children?
Six children.
Okay.
We didn't have more than one, right?
No.
That would have been cool.
Yeah.
That would have been a record, yeah.
You'd have made the paper for sure. Oh.
Yeah, there were four girls and two boys.
Okay. And
there's four of us still living.
Oh, that's good.
Yes. We just lost one last week.
Right. That's hard.
Yeah.
And how many grandchildren and great grandchildren do you have?
Boy.
I knew that would be a hard one.
Yeah.
I think there's about.
Betty had four or five. What was it?
Betty had five.
Five.
And Lillian had four. That's nine. And Glenn had four. That's 13. And Ruth had. Ruth had one, two, three.
About 14.
About four, yeah. 22. And I had six. That's 28. And let's see, we missed anybody? I know it's close to 30.
Oh, wow. That's great. and then great-grandchildren.
Yes.
There are, I know.
Yeah, there's at least, let's see.
I think we run out of numbers.
Yeah, that's a hard one on the great-grandchildren. I would guess there's got to be at least 15
great-grandchildren. Oh, wow. That's a nice family. Are you ever able to get together?
Not too often because they're spread all over the country from California to we live in Birmingham, Alabama.
Right.
Although we've got all of us. Of course, lived here for a long time. And but they're pretty well spread around the country. Represent a lot of states.
Right. Okay. Speaking right now is Lester Pyatt Jr. He is from Alabama. Okay. And do you have some more that you would like to relate to us?
Make your mind.
Is there anything else you would like to talk to us about?
Yeah, tell them a little bit about the survivors group that we formed a survivor group.
Oh, yes. We tried to have a reunion every so often.
Uh-huh.
And the first one we had it was in Chicago.
Oh.
And they had a little over 100
pops
of that one. And then about 2 years later, I promoted one in Detroit.
Yeah, that one that Dad promoted in Detroit was held February the 8th, 1941, at the Hotel Tudler in Detroit. And at that time, there were 23 survivors. And then as late as about 4 years ago, there were only 10 left at that time.
Right.
And the following year, because Dad had a list of them at that time.
Right.
And following that time, there were less than five. And we're not sure today whether there's any outside of Dad throughout the U.S.
Oh,
haven't
right.
been able to contact anybody.
No. But isn't that exciting to have all this information? And
they had in this group. They said the last one gets a bottle of champagne. But they didn't, if he's the last one, they don't
know
who's going to present it to him.
Right, that's true. He'll have to present it to himself.
Yeah.
Okay.
One of the men that was on that ship was a government man. And it turned out that about 15 years after I was in Detroit, he was the man in charge, Detroit here, of all the government work that they were promoting for the unemployed.
Oh, uh-huh.
We were sort of that's during
the depression.
What do you call it when nobody was working?
Yeah, the depression.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
And he was in charge here in Detroit for the government of finding jobs or creating jobs and put as many back to work as possible.
Right, right.
And when I had my reunion for the Tuskegee members, he took the chair to operate it. And he paid all the expenses.
Oh.
And everything. And he took the master's chair for the whole evening.
Uh-huh.
And he brought all the people, they were all women, that he had sent to the White House the week before. They were all singers.
Oh.
He had charge of all the people unemployed, trying to get something for them to do to earn a few dollars.
Oh.
And these people had gotten together in groups to sing. And he had them, they were all at the White House the week before I had my reunion. And I got through his secretary. That's how I happened to get him for my reunion.
Oh, well,
his secretary told me. She said he'd be tickled to death to do it if he'd ask me. So that worked. I asked him as soon as I could.
Uh-huh.
He took over, and he brought that whole group of entertainers that had been at the White House the day before for my party.
Oh, that was nice. That was
I think his name, Dan, was Abner E. Larned, L-A-R-N-E-D.
That's right, that's right.
Uh-huh.
And I'm not sure what his
title
was.
I don't, never found out, and I could never get his real name. The girl would not give me his real name.
Oh.
He was a government employee.
Right.
But that's when they were doing all kinds of jobs to put men to work.
To work, right.
Someday, Dad, I'll go to the library and look up the in the records, and I've got his name, and I think I can find out for you what his title was.
Mm-hmm.
But
he was
it wouldn't make any difference now. He's probably gone by now.
Well,
he may not. He might be older than I am.
Right. Oh. But that is really interesting. And all these...
Yes, you see that... that relation that I got with him was by being on the Tuscania.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
He was on the Tuscania for the government, some kind of work in the government. He wasn't a soldier.
Oh, oh yes.
But he was just a contact with Dick up there when I was roaming around talking to everybody. And he had charge of everything in Detroit for the unemployed.
Right.
Uh-huh. And his secretary would give me his name, but she gave me his telephone number.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I thought that was it. Yeah. Oh, that is very nice. Well, I think that is very interesting, and we're very happy to have you talk with us. And
who am I talking to?
Dolly Ferries.
Dolly
Ferries.
And who are you with? I'm
with the Medicine Heights Historical Commission.
Oh, it is.
Right. And okay, that's, now I guess how do we stop it?